This is David Duke. This is the David Duke live worldwide internet radio broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent wherever they may live. And certainly we believe that our policies and programs and values are consistent and good for all people on this planet, white, black, yellow, or whatever, have a right to preserve their way of life, their very unique character, identity, and heritage, and they have the right to be independent, independent of any global military or political or social or cultural factor that will take away their individual uniqueness and true diversity from this planet and remake this planet into, well, kind of a caricature of McDonald's and the other aspects of modern consumer America. I believe in America. I don't know if I believe in the America that we have become. I'm concerned about my country deeply in so many areas. Yes, we are a rich country, but there are many middle-class Americans who cannot afford health insurance. Lesser countries in the economic standard, such as England, France, Germany, have a situation where any working person can have decent medical care. We have state-of-the-art medical care in America, but let me tell you something. If you're a working-class individual, or if you have your own small company, and you cannot afford insurance, or you've been removed from insurance because of, say, a congenital defect in one of your children, or if you've had a chronic disease in your life, you are not going to be able to afford insurance. And when you have a chronic attack or a chronic or terrible disease or accident or inevitable health disaster in your life, you will lose everything. You'll lose everything you built in terms of your business. You'll lose your home. You'll lose every possession that you have. Ironic, isn't it, when you think of the fact that welfare recipients who don't pay a penny in taxes will get all the modern medical care they need. And illegal aliens will get all the medical care they need. And by the way, if you take a look at these hospitals, all the hospitals today have certain allocations of their budget, large sections of their budget. And that's, I'm talking about even private hospitals, not just public ones, for those indigent or the welfare recipients that come into their halls. They'll sue the pants off of a hard-working, middle-class, tax-paying person. But a welfare recipient or legal alien, they simply allocate a lot of their budget to provide these people with free medical care. But what does that do to the average American? What does that do to the average American who cannot afford his medical bills or who cannot afford insurance? It drives up insurance costs because ultimately we are paying for people who are not paying. That's the reality of life in the United States of America. And it seems to me that we should have a system where the people who paid into our government and pay their taxes over the years, even sometimes over the decades, it seems like they should come first in terms of their medical needs and in terms of the economic aspect of it. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in America losing our culture. We're losing our well-being. How many jobs in America, how many millions of jobs have been outsourced around the world? And it's not simply low-skilled jobs either, my friends. We're talking about middle class, white-collar jobs. We're talking about many computer programming and what we call high-tech jobs. And in addition to outsourcing, our government is actively seeking insourcing, even in the computer industry. I guess Bill Gates wants to pay his employees a little less money, and so, come on, Uncle Sam, he has a lot of influence on Uncle Sam, doesn't he? And so do the other individuals running this globalist economy, this globalist approach of our United States government. So they say, come on in. Meanwhile, we have terrible unemployment among our own homegrown American citizens who've often paid tremendous prices, high costs, for public and private higher education, technical schools, universities, graduate schools, and now they find themselves out of work and out of luck, betrayed by their own government. We have a lot of situations in this country of employers, businesses, whatever you want to call them, in fact, most of the super international corporations who are bringing in massive numbers of illegal aliens. They literally create a climate. They don't enforce the law. They don't keep illegal aliens from being employed in their companies. And in fact, truthfully, they actually seek them because they can get lower wages. But the masses of aliens that come over for these jobs and for the benefits in America, why are they coming over? Why are they? Well, obviously it's for these jobs and for these benefits. But how many of them, of these individuals who come over, have had health insurance? How many of them are criminals? How many of them, you know, who are coming into America without any sort of built-up wealth, how many of them do we have to educate their children? How much is the cost of the illegal aliens? Yes, the company might pay $5 an hour rather than $8 an hour or $10 an hour. But what happens to the community? Well, obviously, these people come in by the masses. They have great numbers of children. Often, of course, their salaries, if they have, you know, even a great salary, and that is not enough to pay for those children. The government, the children get free medical care. That seems to be the best thing they're at, is having lots of illegitimate and legitimate children. Their birth rate is absolutely astounding. They fill up our schools. The cost per student is tremendous. They often get into trouble. They often form gangs. We just had a big crackdown reported in CNN 1 hour ago that the Bloods, the Crips, the Disciples, and an increasingly popular street gang known as MS-13 were among the gangs targeted in the Department of Homeland Security operation over the last 2 weeks that yielded 375 arrests. Gangs, this is what we want in America? Well, obviously, these companies don't pay the price. They don't pay the price for these illegal aliens who are getting medical care at the cost of American citizens. They don't pay the price of crime, of the American individuals who have been raped or murdered by these illegal aliens. And don't kid yourself, a great percentage of those in our jails, they don't pay the price of education. They don't pay the price of all the different aspects of community cost associated with this massive illegal alien influx. We have governments that simply don't react and don't deal with the interests of the United States of America. It's special interests, basically, that control the United States of America anymore. The majority, the great middle-class majority that built America, whose forefathers built America, and we can obviously, describe this mass of people as European Americans. There are certainly elements of among African Americans who have contributed through work and labor and intelligence and the rest of it. And there have certainly been other races who have. But overwhelmingly, the great middle class in America is indeed composed of the white middle class, or what we call the European American. And where is the European American going? Well, it seems like the only time when we ever get a single benefit or something in our interest, it's got to coincide with the interest of some other foreign power, a minority. I'll give you an example. As you know, recently George Bush had a tremendous defeat in the fact that his Abu Dhabi port deal, the United Arab Emirates port deal, fell through. And if you remember, weeks ago, I predicted that this deal would not go through because I could imagine the Jewish lobby and the Jewish press jumping on it and definitely preventing this deal to go through. Now, you know, I'm not in favor of the deal either way. Anyway, I don't want foreigners or people who might be antagonistic to our issues, to our heritage, to our interests. I don't want them controlling our ports. But let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. I also don't want them controlling our phone system like Israel, which has committed spying against this country. And by the way, we just had Mr. Bolton. We just had Mr. Cheney go to AIPAC. That's the Vice President of the United States speaking before an organization whose top leaders were indicted for espionage against the United States of America. Think about that one, ladies and gentlemen, the Vice President. This is insane. Could you imagine the Vice President of the United States going before a Japanese organization who were convicted of espionage against America during the Second World War? I mean, think about it. But this is exactly what's taking place. We no longer have an American policy in the Middle East. We no longer have an American policy in terms of our foreign policy in the world. We have a Jewish supremacist policy. So they didn't want Abu Dhabi to control the ports. I don't think there was any real security risk by them, because security is handled, as you probably know, by American authorities in the ports of the United States of America. And, you know, most of the shipping containers will come from other countries where Americans have no input whatsoever, or very little. Sometimes we have some American inspectors at some of the ports, but a lot of containers come in where there's no American inspection. But we are responsible on our own shores for providing the inspections, and that's done all by Americans and American security people. So the fact that this was an Arab company doesn't make, I think, it doesn't make our situation, our security situation, vulnerable in the United States of America, simply because that doesn't affect the security aspect. However, I'm still not in favor of the deal because, again, I don't want foreign nations being able to control such critically important aspects of the American economy and American security as our ports. Simple as that. But I knew from the beginning, as soon as this came out, I realized the Jewish lobby and the Jewish powers and the media would hop on it and there would be no port deal. But there is no outcry about the Jewish attack against Americans, for instance, in the Levant affair, and the Israeli government awarding the Jewish terrorists who attacked American installations in Egypt, awarding them with medals and calling them heroes. I do have a problem with sitting down with Jewish heads of state, some of the same Jews who were in government at the time that Israel approved the attack on the USS Liberty, an American intelligence gathering ship in international waters in a terrible surprise attack. And the Liberty, of course, we were not at war with Israel. Heck, we were Israel's best friend. But they've never shied away from doing things that would harm America in the interest of the Israeli state or the interest of Jewish supremacism, and that certainly applies in this case. Go to the USS Liberty website, do a Google search, and read the articles by the USS Liberty's Veterans Association, by the people who served in the USS Liberty. And they will tell you, and they'll marshal the evidence, and they'll prove it to you beyond any shadow of a doubt, that Israel knew exactly what they were doing when they were attacking this American ship. And we cannot be necessarily sure of their motives. It could have been that they wanted to get us into war against Egypt, because they certainly were trying to kill all hands on board, even machine gun deployed life rafts. They came back again and again against the Liberty, trying to sink her, trying to destroy her. They took out our recon towers and our radio towers first thing, so that we couldn't report who was doing the attacking. If all people were killed on board and the ship would have gone to the bottom of the Mediterranean, it would have been very difficult to pin anything on Israel, and also the blame would have immediately fallen on Egypt, especially if the Israelis would have planted some false information, just as they were going to plant false information in the Levant affair. So we have a situation where this Jewish state that committed treason against us in terms of their agents here in this country, such as Jonathan Pollard, who's serving a life sentence, and Israel's working very hard to get him out, in terms of the AIPAC case. And here we have this foreign company controlling so much of the American media. Read my chapter on media control from my awakening, and you can get that on my website, davidduke.com. That's www.davidduke.com, and you can read about how would the American people react? How would they have reacted in the 1990s and early parts of the year 2000 and up till the war? Imagine if Saddam Hussein or Iraqis would control the American press, overwhelmingly the top three news magazines, most of the broadcast companies, most of the Hollywood production companies, and they were continually making these movies that were in the Iraqi interest. I think America wouldn't stand for it, but somehow we're able to stand for it and accept it when Israel does these very same things. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's about it. I've got a lot of big work on my schedule tonight. I've got a lot of media to do. In fact, I've got interviews that I'm doing around the country with local and other media. I had a national televised interview ready to go in the Fox News Network. It was canceled at the last second. Well, they don't want David Duke, this so-called former Ku Klux Klansman, defeating these individuals the way the media admitted I defeated Tim Russert on Meet the Press. They don't want that. That's the last thing they want. And they have such a control, and they have so many people in high places in their media. It doesn't happen all the time. They're not always successful in doing that. But sometime when those on the higher up level of their echelon, when they find out about these shows, they're able to stop them. They're able to prevent them. And even if a particular newscaster or programmer wants it, because they know it's good television. I mean, I've had very good luck in terms of some of my past television programs, because a lot of the shows that invited me always said that it's great having David Duke on because we get the highest ratings. People want to tune in. Controversy sells newspapers. Controversy gets in readership. Just take a look at any of the tabloid news shows on television. Controversy is what gets listenership. So you would think it'd be an economic interest for them to have people like myself on their program. But guess what? The first issue to them is not necessarily an economic plus or minus. The first issue to them is how does it serve their interest, their agenda, their political program, and how does it serve their Jewish supremacist ideology. We have to continue to work, ladies and gentlemen, very, very hard to wake up our people all over the world, not only from the standpoint of our own people, but for the sake of world peace and decency and understanding between the races. These Jewish neocons, these extremist Jewish neocons, are dreaming about World War IV, and I make no joke about this. This is exactly the way they describe what they're looking to create. They want World War IV. And the way they describe it as World War IV is they talk about the First World War, Second World War, what they call the Cold War, which they describe as World War III, and what they call World War IV, the clash of civilizations. They seek it. They want this massive bloodshed. They want this terrorism. For one thing, the terrorism and this war on terror and of terror is definitely causing a diminution of our rights back at home. They're able to seize their grip more tightly on our American political process. As you know, we have very little freedom anymore in America. We only have a two-party system. Most countries of Europe and around the world have a multi-party system. And the two-party system is very tightly controlled. And the way they've rigged the game is that every other party has distinct disadvantages, not in terms of the support or the ideas that they represent before people, but they have a disadvantage in the sense that the mechanism of being on the ballot, the mechanism of support, is not as good. Third parties weren't even allowed in many of the debates that we had last year. I mean, not last year, but the last presidential election year between George Bush and Mr. Kerry. Actually, it wasn't that much longer than last year, was it? But we really have an incredible situation, ladies and gentlemen, and we don't really have freedom of speech and press in America. We have the right to publish a pamphlet, to get up on a street corner theoretically and say some things. But again, in a modern society, the publishing of a broadside, a pamphlet, is the Stone Age, like a Stone Age rock as compared to a machine gun or a nuclear bomb. We have a situation today, ladies and gentlemen, where mass media is the critical issue. The only equalizing force in the whole process, of course, is the Internet. And the Internet is the first move toward democratization, I might say, of media in many, many years, because it gives people the ability, if they're intelligent and not even have much money, the ability to design and make a website that's on a par and just as interesting and powerful as anything the New York Times would produce, or CNN, or CBS, or, you know, whatever, World News, whatever. And that is a great asset, and it's something we've got to develop. And I urge the young people listening here, whether you make a career out of it or not, become fluent in the Internet. And older people, so many people I talk to every day. In fact, I know there's a lot of people who get the David Duke Report and have talked to me on the phone so many times who now cannot listen to this program live around the world because they don't know how to use the Internet. And they're intimidated by the Internet. You've got to reach out and help our fellow men and women learn this system and use this system to get better and to go forward in terms of getting our ideas and issues out around the world. That's my dog of the day. That's my bark of the day from my great companion and helper, who travels the world with me and gives this, you know, a writer is an individual who sometimes lives a very lonely life, because in writing sometimes 12, 14 hours a day, and reading and writing, you have to be alone. It demands a great deal of time alone. Of course, I spend a lot of time with other people too. I do many lectures and speeches and public appearances and the rest of it in my life. But I also spend great amounts of time alone in study and reading, research and writing. And it's great to have a dog that's small enough that I can carry her with me, and she keeps me company and keeps my my mood and my spirit up. So excuse the barking occasionally, but she's my kind of my watchdog, and she helps watch out for me and let me know about sounds that I can't hear and approaches that I couldn't hear. So please put up with her barking, and really, maybe all of you should give her a little vote of appreciation, because she helps keep my spirits up and helps me do some of the work that I do, and helps keep me a little safe too, because of the fact that she's there. She is again, because she lets me know what's going on in the world. Appreciate everything, and with that great serenade from my very loyal, you know, man's best friend, I just want to thank you again for all your help and your work and your efforts truly to bring our message to the world. We've got to continue to work to take this message, and your computer and your keyboard in front of you gives you that opportunity right now. Thanks so much, and I'll see you again on Monday. Don't forget to listen to Bob Whitaker tomorrow, and I'll be back with you Monday. Thank you, and good night.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information, and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddude.com.